A few weeks ago, my son Sam began reading Where the Red Fern Grows. It is a wonderful chapter book, and yet when I saw him halfway through it, my heart sank. I see some nods of recognition. Some of you remember it is a book about a boy and his beloved dogs. And it is a tearjerker. Sam, who is in third grade, did not know this yet. And I had been waffling on whether to give him a little heads up when my husband, Jesse, asked me just that at dinner. "Did you tell him?" he asked, the ellipsis implying the heartbreak that I remember so clearly from grade school. Of course, Sam, who was sitting next to me, then immediately wanted to know what I had or had not told him. And I explained that there was a sad part ahead. And then I wondered if there were other sad books that he had read that might have prepared him. "Well, there's obviously Harry Potter," my daughter chimed in. And the two of them began listing people who die in the series. As I listened, my eyes began to well up, remembering each of these dear characters. And after creating a truly exhaustive list, there are few things my kids approach with more intensity than Harry Potter trivia. My son added one more: Voldemort. Voldemort, the worst, most evil wizard in history, the one young Harry is at lethal odds with through all the books. I was not expecting this. And then Sam continued, "I always thought he would turn to the good at the end." He explained how that was maybe the saddest part for him. He had hoped and hoped that Voldemort's heart would be transformed. And it doesn't happen, at least not that we hear. I wasn't quite sure what to say. Hope is a fundamentally risky thing. I wonder if this explains some of the women's response in our Easter story today. Each gospel gives us a slightly different take on the story, and this is the only one where neither the women nor the disciples meet Jesus again. They don't get to lay eyes on the risen Christ. They don't get to touch him in his new form. Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James and Salome, they come to the tomb at dawn. The sun is only barely up, the Sabbath just over, and they come, their arms heavy with spices to anoint his body. This already is a brave act. The disciples are hiding behind locked doors, wondering if the authorities are coming for them next. But the women, bound by their love, they plan to come and pour that love out into this heartbreaking death. It's no surprise, then, that they do not know what to make of this stranger's message. Their beloved, who was crucified, he's not here. He's alive. He's gone on ahead of them. The women are amazed and terrified. Some of their fear must be tied up in the crucifixion, which was the point of crucifixion, to terrorize everyone into falling into line under the empire. But my hunch is that some of their fear has to do with the silent hope that is now growing within them. The tomb is empty. This strange person is telling them wild things, seemingly impossible things. Maybe they are beginning to remember that Jesus said this would happen, but it sounds too good to be true. Welcoming this hope must seem like a dangerous proposition. Here is my confession. It had not occurred to me to hold out hope that Voldemort could be redeemed. I had completely written him off. This is not my theology, to be clear. If you ask me on any day if I believe that anyone is beyond the redeeming love of God, I will tell you that I do not. I will tell you this passionately and probably for longer than you really want to hear. But Voldemort? It hadn't even crossed my mind to hope for him. As I sat with this, I realized that maybe I had also stopped holding out hope for some of the leaders in our Muggle world who are similarly violent and destructive, and for the situations unfolding around them. I had given up on them also. This caught in my throat. My heart suddenly felt heavy. I was struck by how daunting it can be to hold on to hope. Hope is scary because there's no ironclad assurance that it'll come to be, whatever it is. It could be anything. Hope for a much wanted child. Hope that will eventually make ends meet. Hope for sobriety. Hope that the cancer treatment will work. My goodness, we hope for beautiful and fragile things. This hope is part of being human, and it can feel awfully tender, even when we're surrounded with the joy of lilies and soaring Easter music and so many bright faces. Even with all this beauty, hope is costly. Hope asks us to open our hearts wide, to hold them out vulnerably as we name our deep longing. Even before we can lay eyes on it, before we can take it into our hands. So yes, of course the women stay silent at first. I can see them shaking their heads in bewilderment as they walk away from the empty tomb. Hope for any of these things, from the smallest to the greatest, is fundamentally risky. I don't have to tell you that our world is still hurting. The kingdom of God is still coming into being. We're still trying to join with God in ushering it in. It's not here yet. But the promise of resurrection is not that our hopes will never be met with disappointment. Resurrection is not a silver bullet. Sometimes new life comes in a flash, and often resurrection works more slowly, more quietly than that, in ways we cannot begin to imagine or understand. Maybe that's why the women walk away, deep in thought, their hearts just beginning to quicken at the possibility of what's unfolding. The stranger has not promised them that everything is fixed. It's a different kind of Easter hope that comes through in Mark's gospel. Here, we find an empty tomb and a stranger and the promise that Jesus is going ahead of them, beckoning them to follow. And this, friends, this is the good news of Easter. It's not just that Christ is risen, wondrous as that joy is. It is the deeper, more tender good news that Jesus has been through it all. That there is nowhere we can go that he is not already out ahead of us. In our fear, in the brokenness of the world, in our not knowing how things will pan out, in all of it, God is already there, Jesus has lived it and is out ahead of us still. Our story ends today with the women leaving the tomb, silent in their awe and their fear. The gospel says that they say nothing to anyone, but of course they don't stay quiet. This is why we're here today. Somewhere in the days that follow, the women get bold. They gather up their courage and they let themselves hope. They set out, leaving the tomb far behind, and they go on to Galilee. They pull the other disciples into this hope with them, heading out into all that comes next. Hope is risky business. And God's call to us here at Easter is that we embrace this risky hope. God calls us to risk hoping for new life returning, risk hoping that healing and wholeness is possible, risk hoping that we can live fully as ourselves and be completely loved. God calls us to risk hoping that a healthier world is possible, risk hoping that we can find our way to peace, risk hoping that everyone, even Voldemort, can turn back to love. We don't need to pretend that it's not scary to open our hearts wide like that. And yet there is good reason for this audacious, risky hope. Together, we can reach for this hope because as Easter people, we see how love wins. That's what we celebrate today, the truth that love is always out ahead. We can tether ourselves to this hope because death does not have the final word. We can chase after this hope because God is always working to make all things new, even before we can see the way forward. And we can live out this hope because, friends, this is the good news of Easter. No matter what happens, no matter where we go, God is already there. The risen Christ is already out ahead of us, inviting us to turn from the tomb and run into the hope of new life.